This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Hi, listeners. This is Paul. I am an intern at Learning Teams, Inc. Welcome to Season 5 and the 108th episode of the Hop Into Action podcast. Brent Sutton is not missing in action, but recovering from a virus that affected his voice and will be back behind the microphone soon. The Hop Into Action series is an ongoing discussion about building a better community of practice for people and organizations who want to improve safety, quality, and operational excellence using HOP, Learning Teams, the 4Ds, and other learning frameworks. The host of the podcast, Brent Sutton, explores through conversation, diversity of thought, and reflects on the organizational challenges and learning opportunities that can be identified and improved on by using HOP and Learning Teams for normal everyday work and management of change to create better work. For those of you in safety, it is about moving from preventative safety to productive safety, creating sustainable practices and improving operations. Today, Brent Sutton is joined by Josh Bryant from Mitchell Services in Queensland, Australia. They share their story of their tour of Canada with Baz the Crocodile. So please sit back and enjoy this series of Hop Into Action.
Well, listeners, I'm sitting here with Josh, and we're in the beautiful city of Auckland in New Zealand. And Josh and I have just finished 2.5 weeks of travelling, of which we got to spend some wonderful time in Vancouver and in Banff and then back to Auckland. So how are you feeling, Josh?
Mate, I'm trashed. I'm ready to go home, but what an amazing experience, I'll be honest. Everyone was so welcoming. I was quite nervous. That's the first probably keynote that I've done at a conference, particularly in a safety role. It was the Energy Safety Canada conference held in Banff at the Fairmont Springs. Now, conferences I'm used to going to, maybe 200 people is a small one. 400 is a good turnout. We had the one in Wollongong, which was about 600. This had just over 900. It's like 930. It was absolutely like mental in terms of size for me. But everyone was so welcoming and actually like there to learn. Like it was actually really cool. But it really showed what you and I have been talking about these different markets.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, you live in the Australian market. You've now gone to the Canadian market. What do you think are some of the differences between them?
Yeah. What stood out for me is, and it's becoming more apparent that like within Australia, it seems that we're at that early adoption stage, particularly with something like human and organisational performance, like the terms moving around. But when I've talked to like many of the Canadian market, like the HOP principles are sort of normal language, particularly around that Calgary area. You know, it was an oil and gas conference that we went to, but the principles are heavily, I'd like to say, embedded. They actually know what they are, whether they're applied or not. Maybe a different story, but definitely the familiarity with the language compared to the Australian market like really, really stood out.
Yeah, so you've got Energy Safety Canada as a industry body.
Yep.
It's an employer body, and I think they have been leading the way in HOP in terms of messaging. So we talk about advocacy and fluency for an organisation. They have been creating the advocacy, the HOP stuff, for the industry as a whole.
Yeah, I honestly think Australia might lack a body that can push this forward. Like, there's lots that are really trying to advocate for, you know, learning what the thinkers are coming up with, like particularly in the academic space and like the major thinkers that trying to get that out there. But there's none of these advocacy groups that we've seen, like Energy Safety Canada, and even where we are now with the, you know, I spoke yesterday at the New Zealand Business Leaders Forum with our CEO Andrew Elf, and you know, that's a group advocating for this new way of thinking. So, like, they're trying to influence businesses and get this information out to them. Within Australia, I don't see a particular body that's trying to do that.
Yeah, look, I would agree, because what I'm seeing around the world are industry bodies publishing standards or publishing guidelines around hop or human performance. But what I don't see, and I think really the secret to Energy Safety Canada, is they're really about building that ability to advocate hop both at a leadership end, but also at the frontline end as well. And if I look at our audience, you know, those, you know, 900 sounds a lot, but in reality, we had 900 people that wanted to come along and actually listen and learn and share their own experiences. So, you know, for us, our day one was a workshop, and it was scary, you know, walking into that facility and seeing a frigging banner with our two heads. I won't say who was on top of the other.
Yeah, you were growing out of mine, all right? So, you know, you're the growth.
I was the growth.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, we'd been emailed day before saying, you know, could we, you know, more people want to come along? Will we move into a bigger room? And we said, absolutely, you know, bring as many as you can. But in reality, we had nearly double what they had allocated. There were that many people wanted to come and actually, you know, participate in that process. So we spent, what, 4 hours with about sort of 75, 80 people. And, you know, the energy in the room was a buzz because they really wanted to hear some of these stories.
Yeah. I mean, yourself and Jeff attended the conference last year, and I think it was that initial exposure to the 4Ds and the power, and it was almost like some of the room were like coming back for a second go. You know, that they've had entree, where's the mains? And I appreciated Jeff and yourself giving me the opportunity to come along and share from a practical side of things, like from a practitioner, not as a, you know, an advisor or in a consultant capacity, but someone who actually uses it day to day. And I got really lots of positive feedback that, you know, it's almost like that conversation unlocked that this is possible and this is how you use it. We've seen businesses in Australia adopt the 4Ds. So, you know, ones that stand out for me are Linfox and Coca-Cola. And I know Coca-Cola have moved from a more of that mini learning team way of thinking to that conversational way, which is what Mitchell Services does. And the team in Canada really appreciate just going, excellent. Like, if I go and have these conversations, how do you use the data? Do you look for themes? What do you use it for? Just sharing that practical element. Like, I got lots of really positive feedback saying, hey, it's great to see how this is used and how it improves a business.
Yeah, so it was. So for me, obviously, 1 year was a lot of soak time for the Canadian market. But there was a shift about, stop telling us about the what and the why, and let's hone in on the how and the when.
Yeah. So what's happened that's really stood, and this is a bit of a pivot for myself with the 4Ds, is that it's this mindset that it unlocks so much stuff that you don't know and you feel that you have to fix it. And it's been great having these constant conversations over these last 2.5 weeks that it's about learning. And I actually do like learning team's way of looking at it, that, you know, listen and then learn and then lead. And you know what lead might be is taking no action, but still providing that feedback to the person who is giving you the 4D or the area that's giving you the 4D. It's also about learning, not just fixing everything.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, my observations have been that self-improvement happens with the teams in the 4Ds, and that, you know, organisations feel that they have to drive change, but in actual fact, a lot of change is actually happening. And if anything, what I'm observing is those work groups feel that they have more autonomy in that process, and that actually sets them up for more successful work.
Yeah. I guess my flip side of that is if they're having 4D conversations, I'd still like to know some of the outcomes, because the thing is, the way that my operations work is that, you know, they're almost like isolated sort of mini colonies.
Yeah.
And if they are doing local learning and local improvements, you know, that site might be exactly like another site that can actually learn off that. So I'm just careful that learning is still shared across the business, and I get the local side of things, but, you know, you're not going to unlock everything for the business.
Yeah, and that, hence the reason why you got to capture that narrative at the front line.
Yeah.
And then look for that stuff that, that's being driven by that. And you know, we are hopeful that at the 30th anniversary of HOP, we're going to be releasing a new tool at the 30th. And that tool is very much focused around that retrospective learning, so that the organisation could also see the themes that are happening from what the workers are learning, not so much about the conditions in the work that is driving the learning. So I think we're trying to, you know, balance those two things up as, yeah, as we go. But, you know, if we had it done that a year ago, Josh?
No.
No. It wouldn't have worked for people. Makes sense. It's like, you know, how do we keep evolving this process?
Yeah.
Because this all comes down to continuous improvement.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And look, if you guys have come up with another tool and it reinforces the HOP philosophies in organisations, look, you know what we're like. We can't wait to try it. And we look forward to hearing what comes out of CHOL, like, and what other people are doing as well. From my side too, what I've found with particularly the New Zealand Business Forum that we spoke at yesterday, that they are trying to shift leaders. Like, it's really important that leaders understand this, and we're, you know, leveraging off the top of the table. But what always stands out is that leader's reaction is going to control whether any program's going to have success.
100%. And I think, once again, you know, we talked, one of the things that we've been talking about a lot is that in the more successful deployments of HOP overseas, that the HOP teams always separate the difference between building the advocacy and the fluency. So just so I'm clear, advocating for HOP is that people understand its benefit, its value, they can talk to it, and fluency is they're able to apply the language that exists within their workplace, and they're quite different things. So a leader doesn't necessarily have to be fluent in all of it. They just need to be able to advocate. Or a health and safety rep doesn't have to be fluent in all things HOP, but they need to be able to advocate in their way to support frontline workers.
Yeah.
But those organisations, they run those programs constantly because they know there's change. Change is normal.
Yeah, we were talking to groups that they might need a refresh every 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, so once again, their HOP programs, they refresh. But the building of advocacy and fluency happens all the time. I think one organisation shared with us that their leadership turnover rate was 100% every 5 years.
Crazy.
So, and we know that when leaders come in, they want to make their mark.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep, and the first thing they look for is, how are things done around here and how can I influence that? And the strategy is that if they hear a consistent message from people about HOP, that will influence what they want to do.
Yep.
And I think that was really the key message that I've got. But still, a lot of organisations are still focusing on how do we operationalise? And I still think what I was hearing, there's still this big thing that they think it's some form of transformation.
Yeah. Yep.
And you know, I think transformation, seldom do those projects ever actually get success.
Yeah. Or you do a transformation and then that will stick for a bit and the next person will come along and want to change it. Yep. So it sort of just needs to become part of your DNA. What I found, like, in Canada, like, that HOP fluency is quite strong. Right, it really is. Like, there's a lot of understanding of the principles. Like, here in New Zealand, I spoke at a GM event this morning, and I asked the room, like, who here has heard of HOP and these HOP principles? About 80% of the room put their hands up, and I said, well, okay, who's put it into an organisation? And, like, literally there was about three to five hands up in the room. So I think lots of people understand the principles and maybe just see them as sort of five, six guiding ways to do things. But yeah, what does that look like in a business? Like, you know, how do I implement it? Like, give me some tools. So for me, I think I keep talking to safety professionals and I'm like, really understand what the principles mean to yourself first before you worry about putting them in your business.
Mm-hmm. And of course, everyone's deployment will look different. There is no one and done. There's no magic recipe that we see. Everyone's journey has to be different in that space. And where they start and where they finish is also different. We were working with some unions up in North America on this trip, and they're using HOP to advocate for workers around better work design, particularly in the psychosocial risk space. If that's all they do with HOP, that's fantastic.
Yeah, cool.
Okay. The organization doesn't need to be a HOP believer for that to happen.
No. And feedback that I got from a large company in New Zealand is that what it's allowed them to do is just, it's given them an avenue to change language in their business. So it's that simple stuff from changing it from an investigation to an event, you know, changing it from like an investigation report to an event learning report, like small things like that, those small changes in language that are aligned to the HOP way of thinking. But that's all they're doing is just change it. Like we said, Trojan mice, 100 small things. That they're seeing success by just doing that little bits and pieces.
Yeah. And I think it's more than language, because it's then how we treat people.
Yep.
You know, I wrote that article recently about moral injury, and I still believe in even the work that I do today, you know, investigations tend to harm people, not restore people. And we've got to stop it, because it's madness.
Yeah, I've shared that when we have an event in our organisation, we try and do a Teams meeting as quickly as we can with the people involved. But it's more to allow them to share their story, like do that short storytelling. And it's also to find out that work is normal, just to go, you know, well, what does a successful day look like, and what surprised you on this day, and, you know, what could we do differently? What does management need to know about that? The first question that people are asking is like, oh, do people mind being recorded? Like, the principle, though, is about learning and having trust first to enable you to do that.
Oh, look, 100%, because, yeah, I remember that comment being said in the room, and I thought, okay, well, you're coming from a position that your workers don't trust you.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
And the work that we do, that never comes up.
No.
Because they understand that the information they're sharing will not be weaponized for that purpose.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Really.
And the reason why, in your case, you're recording it is because you want the narrative or context. Because the moment you start writing stuff down, it's going to start being filtered.
Yeah.
Because it's normal.
Can only write so fast.
Yeah. Couples therapy, you know, communication is given, communication is received. Okay, so you know, by starting with what does normal look like, we're not creating that anxiety of revisiting the event. And I don't know what you've found, Josh, but I've found that the group will naturally move to the event when they're ready. You don't need to force it.
No.
It just happens.
No.
And I don't know what you've found, but shockingly, I find very little difference between normal work and work on the day of the event. Okay, there's not a huge gap. But of course, the gap between work is imagined and normal work.
Yeah.
That's the challenge. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think that's where the organizations respond badly, because they see that gap as being bad.
Yep.
And I'd challenge people in the work that I do that gap is an accumulation of small changes that have happened over time that the system hasn't listened to or picked up. And that's because we use blunt instruments like reporting.
Yeah.
You know, people talk about, you know, I empower you to speak up. Well, I can be empowered in 100 different ways. Doesn't mean that I want to speak up if I don't feel that I have some ability to create change.
Yeah, at the end of that.
And I challenge that group today that empowerment and autonomy are two very different things. Because one person was saying, oh, we're giving our people permission on when to start work. I don't understand what that means. If you don't understand how you see yourself in the work, you're still running a permissions-based system.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, and the worker should be deciding that I have, my work is set up in a way that supports me to be successful, not is the job safe enough to start.
Yeah, that's on me.
Yeah. It's a whole permissions bullshit
thing.
And let's face it, if you're working on live energy, when's it ever going to be safe?
In this trip as well, there's always that mix of critical risk management. So it's, more and more operators or more and more businesses are starting to understand like the importance of critical risk management. What's been nice to share on this trip has been, that difference between a critical control, what's a real critical control, how do you verify that, looking at presence of and effectiveness of those controls has been excellent. So it's not like HOP switches all that off. No, it's actually in support of it. So that's been really good. And look, speaking at the business forum yesterday and everything, I always end with Todd's slide that says we need to change our view of safety, that safety is not the absence of accidents, but the presence of capacities, of controls, and for things to go well, and when they don't, that we can fail safely. Yeah. It lands with people, but you just hope they walk out of the room and go, how am I pivoting to meet that then? What am I doing?
So I'll just share with the audience, there were two standouts for me at Banff. One was Baz the Crocodile.
Oh, please.
So Baz was Josh's emotional support crocodile.
That thing has done so many miles, it's not funny, all right?
Does it have its own frequent flyer card?
Yes, all right. No, but for the audience, I did take a 2-meter inflatable crocodile on stage. But the lead-in was to talk about stereotypes. I'm from Australia. I was talking to 900 Canadians. You carry a crocodile on stage for, a bit of a laugh, and it settles the audience as well. So it's got a big story, but then it led into, a really decent discussion on stereotypes.
Yeah, well, look, it made the front page of a national safety publication. So
again, I had to share the limelight. All right, yeah, tried to have my moment, and it got taken by a big plastic inflatable crocodile. Fantastic. Right, yeah. And your second one, Brent?
The second one. Look, I was really fascinated by the conversation from Matt Hallowell
on Hecker.
On Hecker, and I really liked what he talked about the fact that we should stop thinking about critical risks from the point of view of the degree of harm and think of the critical risk based on the degree of energy.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting because it took me back to my early days around machinery safety where you wanted to know how much energy could this thing release. And it just sat with me all of a sudden that Matt said that anything that can release more than 1,500 joules of energy is a critical risk. Like it was that, like...
Yeah, black and white.
So I could work out that if I've got forklifts in my business, I can work out the mass of them, their weight with their load. I can work out the speed they operate at. And instantly I can work out that. Okay, and if you don't want that forklift to breach that level of energy, then speed control it.
Yeah. Yep. Reduce the joules.
Yeah. And so I that was really compelling to me because it was goes back to good basic engineering around energy.
Yep.
And I think we've lost that because for some reason we've become so fixated on the risk side of the equation that we've lost contact with the hazard itself.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I even found like the influence of Matt when I've presented my reliability envelope model and, I was talking about joules of energy and, this is increase and it's about 1,500, like just banks, like Hecker's obviously, they are doing some great work. And it's worth the audience looking up.
Yeah, and I can see the close relationship that the 4Ds can have and enhancing Hecker, because at the end of the day, we talk about, when are those controls present? When are they working? you know, when don't they work?
Yeah,
all that stuff exists in the storytelling.
Yeah, and then are they are those controls difficult to use? Absolutely. Are they different between work sites? Do they make sense to use? Are those controls different between sites, between work methods, between sequences?
Yeah, when does it become challenging?
Yeah.
When the controls are being, when do we find those controls demanding or the impact of those controls at our work? That's just classic 4Ds type conversations. So that, and of course, look, big thanks to Murray at NHSF Canada, the CEO, Gord, Amy, all the team that were there. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Big shout out Bruce Jackson, who's based in Vancouver. Bruce is who I would hold up to be an iconic health and safety leader in that area. His bucket list was to go to Banff.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. He's such a beautiful...
He was, and look, I remember he sat through our Lego exercise and his jaw dropped. And he said, only if I had this stuff earlier in my career about how much difference it would actually make. So when those people share those stories, because they're coming from a genuine place. That makes our work worthwhile because we're adding to something from these seasoned professionals.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those guys aren't arguing about what's the best model.
No, and agree.
Okay, and that's what I enjoyed about that part of the trip in particular. And of course, shall we talk about the weather?
Mate, I saw snow for the second time ever and I got to do a snow angel. And I actually said to my group, if it snowed, I promise you I'll do a snow angel. So the stupid Queenslander did a snow angel. So, yeah, amazing. And I guess, like, wrapping up, we got to see the University of British Columbia and got to see Gontran and his team. You know, this is a university that's got 100,000 students, you know, 15,000 staff, campus. Basically, the campus the size of the Brisbane CBD. It was just, yeah, incredible. But just the amount of care and risks and community in that facility was incredible. Like, everyone was quite thankful of each other, but knowing that there's, you know, traffic management, resident management, you know, people coming and going, volumes. It was, yeah, that was a...
Well, they even had their own postal service.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. It was just, we can't comprehend the scale. No. It's just, and this is why going to North America is so valuable. Because, you know, we talk about, oh, it's going to be hard for us to do a deployment with 900 people. It's going to be hard. And over there, 900 is tiny.
Yeah, it's a tiny business.
It's a tiny business. Josh, thank you for the last 2.5 weeks.
Thank you. And, like, a big shout out to Francois and I guess the team at the Business Leaders Forum in New Zealand. We got myself and my CEO out here to talk and share our story as well. And then with some local businesses such as Fonterra. So, look, it's been great. Thank you for the opportunity. And, you know, good luck with the second volume of the book that's been released.
Yeah, and
mate, we look forward to hearing what this secret tool is that's going to come out at Chol. I can't wait to see what it does and what we learn.
Yeah, at the moment it's called Project 4X.
Oh, God.
Thanks, Josh.
Bye.